address those excoriating findings and to change the culture of the church. First, let's hear from three people who have been touched in different ways by the independent inquiry. Andrew Greystone, an advocate for victims and survivors. The solicitor Richard Scorer, who represented a number of survivors during the inquiry. And a survivor of adult clerical abuse who has waived her right to anonymity, Jo Kind. She also serves on the committee of the campaign and support group Minister and Clergy Sexual Abuse Survivors as their representative in Wales.
It's a relief to have got to this stage with it, really. We're pleased that so many of the things that survivors have been saying for a couple of decades at least have been noted and looked at by the inquiry. There's a tiredness about people, I think, that, you know, here we are all these years on and now this is being recognised in the public domain. One of the best things, I think, for survivors who report within the Church of England is seeing that the responsibility of safeguarding could go to people who are professionals instead of to the bishops. And so many people have an experience of a bishop who is the pastoral carer for the perpetrator, but also for the person making the complaint, which is incredibly conflicted and leaves them baffled at any kind of sense of fairness. So that's a really good recommendation for us.
Jo, you very much see this as a work in progress.
Yeah, definitely. We really need to see what's going to happen next. Within that as well, a Christian response. You know, this, we're talking about the church and not just some secular organisation. There's a moral and ethical responsibility here to weave into the response that the church is based on.
Andrew, as far as it goes, do you regard this as a strong report?
It is a strong report, and I hope that every single person who sees themselves as part of the Church of England, not only clergy and employees, but also people who go to their local church every Sunday and belong there, will read this. The report holds up a mirror to the Church of England and shows it what it has been like in relation to victims and survivors of abuse. And the picture in the mirror is extremely ugly. The limitation is that the church already knew what it looked like, certainly as far as the hierarchy of the church goes. So there is nothing there that is news to the bishops and leaders of the church. The big question is, what are they going to do about it? Why have they taken so long to actually take any action to put things right with victims and survivors?
Richard, as you read through this report, what are the identifiable patterns of action and inaction that you can discern there?
Well, I agree with Andrew and Jo that I think this report is very strong on analysis of the problem. On recommendations, it isn't quite so strong. There are some good recommendations around things like the role of bishops, but it only goes so far. I should say, in fairness to ICSA, the things that I think are necessary, like mandatory reporting and permanent external oversight of church safeguarding, these things were never going to be addressed in this report because the inquiry has other work to complete before it comes to making its big ticket recommendations. So I think those recommendations, if we get them, we're always going to come further down the line. In terms of the recommendations that are in there, they're all sensible things, but equally they are things that the church could and should have been doing 5 years ago. Why are we here in 2020 with ICSA saying to the church, you need to do these things, when it has known for several years that they are necessary?
Richard, why don't we have mandatory reporting?
I think that's a very good question. We are an outlier in terms of Western countries in not having some form of mandatory reporting. We clearly need it, and I think it is essential that ICSA recommends it when it comes to make its final recommendations. If you look at the wording of church safeguarding policies, one of the problems is that the requirement to report is not stated in clear enough terms. It talks about that you should report, not that you must report, and that is a continuing problem.
And Jo, you raised the question of an appropriate Christian response earlier, and many people will agree with you that Christians really shouldn't need the law to tell them to do the right thing.
No, they shouldn't. And it's a question of what's being said from the pulpit, which is the, you know, the message of Christian compassion, which means actually to go out of your way to meet somebody in their pain. And that's the message that the New Testament gives. And we're not seeing that you know, on the ground and with individuals. And that's, you know, that's both in the parish level. I'm generalising, but it's at the parish level where victims find themselves to be held at arm's length from the community in which they have been and in which they've been abused, at worst vilified and cast out. And at best, they live with the abuse, but not able to kind of integrate that into their church life, because people find it really difficult to hold the good and the bad about the people who've done wrong. So, you know, victims are left knowing that the person who's harmed them did do some good in life, but also knowing that they caused them the greatest harm. And if we're not getting that leadership from the top of actually getting inside that and walking alongside people and meeting and being real about what's gone wrong, then the people in the pews are not going to be able to do that either. We need strong leadership.
These are important questions, and it brings us to the role of bishops and indeed the archbishops in this whole saga. The Archbishop of Canterbury was speaking on Wednesday amid responses, immediate responses from some survivors of abuse, calling for him to resign. And this is how he responded on Wednesday morning on the Today programme.
I know that since I came into this job, I have worked as hard as I could to move the church to a different place. But it is necessary that we can show that we have changed and we've got systems in place. And part of that is independent oversight and independent handling of redress. We've now got up and running, after far too long, a safe spaces project where people can get help and support. And we will be putting in, and we are putting in place, we've just allocated some money to it, a redress system. But, you know, I understand his anger. I'm not disputing what he says. We've got to do better, and I've got to show that I can do better.
Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury. Richard Score, do you think he should resign?
Well, I think the calls for him to resign are entirely understandable. I mean, it's extraordinary when you think about it that this scandal has been unfolding over 30 years in the Church of England, and in that whole time, not a single senior cleric has ever accepted personal responsibility and personal accountability for these failings. I think for myself, what I always stress is that this is a systemic problem in the church. It's a deeply rooted problem of church culture. And so in that sense, it goes beyond any single individual. What I would say about the position Justin Welby's in now is that if he's not going to resign, he needs to be giving a very, very strong lead personally on this. And he needs to be personally committing to delivering measurable outcomes and agreeing to resign if those things are not delivered. What is he going to deliver, and when is he going to deliver it by?
Jo Kind, what would you say to the Archbishop of Canterbury very directly at this point?
I would say, please meet with people. Please meet with survivors. Please meet with victims. Please meet with the people who are helping them. Sadly, victims and survivors are experts in how to get this better. We're calling for us to be at the point of co-producing material for the church rather than being asked to ratify and rubber stamp policies and things once they've been created. The case in point at the moment is Safe Spaces, which the Archbishop referred to. This is a project which has taken, I think, 7 years to get off the ground, and actually is something very different from the original conception, which was to meet people very quickly and to help them very quickly. The service wasn't up and running properly on Wednesday, the day after this report, and actual people have actually rung and not been able to get the support they need. And again, with that, please ask survivors how to run this service. We will help.
And Andrew, I want to get your thoughts on the Archbishop of Canterbury too, but also take us on to the other questions, how we might move forward beyond this report into the future.
Yeah, one of the things that the challenges that the report poses to the church is to suggest that it's no longer any good for church leaders, for bishops, to mark their own homework on this. The responsibility for dealing with safeguarding failures in the Church of England has to be taken outside the church. The management and organisation and care of victims of abuse can no longer sit within the church, and that the church must realise that and must appoint an independent body to manage safeguarding, not just to audit what the church is doing, but to run it.
And there are obviously historical reasons why bishops have this kind of role, Richard, theological reasons, amongst others, why they have this kind of role. Is it possible to redesign the system whereby bishops are removed from that oversight?
Well, in theory it is. In practice, I think it may be quite difficult. But for me, that's why you need independent oversight of safeguarding. And to be clear on that, I'm not suggesting that you take safeguarding out of the church. The church has to own safeguarding. It has to do it. Yep. It has to drive it through. But the oversight of whether that's happening, that has to be independent of the church, and that has to be established on a permanent basis.
One of the strongest and most appalling things to come out of the report was the analysis that the church in its culture and its practices has cared more for its own reputation and its own institutional future than it has for the well-being of vulnerable survivors and victims. And I would want to ask the Archbishop of York, you know, he and the Archbishop of Canterbury have pointed to the increase in money that has been spent on safeguarding staff. And they could also point to the increase in money that's spent, the huge millions of pounds that are spent on reputation management by the church. Where is the sign, the expenditure on redress or reparation for survivors of the church's abuse? There is no budget line anywhere in the church for care for survivors of abuse. There are huge budgets for communications. There are increasing budgets for safeguarding. There is no money set aside, even after this report, for caring for victims of abuse. Why didn't the Archbishop of Canterbury come out on Wednesday and say, alongside the other 40 diocesan bishops, we will put money into the care of victims of abuse? Why are they still avoiding that?
And when we're addressing the bishops, and we'll be talking to the Archbishop of York in a second, Joe, do you think they have the moral credibility to drive these changes?
Well, one would like to think so. These are the bishops of the Church of England. I hope so, and I hope that they have actually the moral fibre and strength. The credibility is thin at the moment, but I would ask them to find some moral strength and to not wait for the next person to do it, to actually to respond themselves as individual bishops and not just wait for the hierarchy to respond.
Joe Kind, Andrew Greystone and Richard Scorer. And I put some of their concerns to the Archbishop of York, the Most Reverend Stephen Cottrell, who told me how he feels about a report that's been described as shameful and disastrous for the Church of England.
Well, the first thing I'd want to say is that reading the report is both shocking and terribly revealing of a culture that has been in the Church and we still haven't completely moved on from. And so I suppose my overwhelming emotion reading it was profound sorrow, first of all, of course, for those who've suffered abuse, profound sorrow and deep regret for the way the church often covered this up and colluded with it, was more concerned with its own reputation, profound sorrow for those whose confidence in the church has been, you know, not just undermined, sometimes completely destroyed. And the other thing is, I know that if I was listening to me speaking right now, if I was a survivor or a victim, I would say, yeah, but I don't want any more words. I don't want to hear any more about your sorrow and your regret. What are you going to do about it? But at the moment, right here, right now, all I can offer is more words. And I'm hoping that as I'm relatively new in post, I'm hoping people might give me just a little bit of time. I'm not asking for much. And I want to say, well, to the whole nation, to the church, but particularly to those who've suffered because of the church's failings, I am absolutely determined to help change the culture of the church and to really take on board these recommendations. We cannot let this go on. And although we have made real strides in recent years, I know that it is not enough. I know we have further to go. But yeah, my overwhelming emotion is one of, you know, just shocking sadness, deep penitence. My response is to weep, to prostrate myself, and then rise up and say, I am determined to try to make this different, but I know that my words are not sufficient.
If your words are not sufficient, what needs to happen to change that culture you've just been describing?
As I say, let's not underestimate the changes that have been made, which the ICSA report acknowledges, but let's also not underestimate that we still have a way to go. For me, there are three things. First of all, independent accountability of the church's safeguarding. I welcome that. I mean, it's something actually I've been arguing for some years within the House of Bishops, and there are many bishops who welcome this. We will now make that change. I mean, you know, this is the path we've been going down in recent months.
That means you'll take bishops out of the mix so that there's independent accountability.
Well, there's different ways of... I can't give you the details of how we'll do it, but I can tell you that we will do that. There will be independent accountability. And as I welcome that, if you look at other professions, it's normal. So I welcome that. And I think that will really help us. It'll help me to do a better job. It'll help people to have greater confidence in our processes.
So, to be absolutely clear on that first point, and then you can move on, that means you're saying that responsibility for safeguarding will be taken out of the hands of diocesan bishops.
Well, the responsibility for safeguarding always rests with us. But I'm saying that we need to be independently accountable. There needs to be independent provision. But ultimately, of course, one thing I cannot delegate is responsibility. If the church fails, I am responsible.
Does that mean external oversight?
Yes, it means that there are...
It means that bishop's accountable to someone else when the bishop messes up.
That's right. And I don't ask me for the details of how we will do this. The ICSA report itself doesn't give those details, but it sets a direction of travel, which is a direction of travel that I, and certainly the Archbishop of Canterbury, welcome. And we have ourselves already started to, in recent months, to begin to work out what this might look like. So that's the first thing.
All right, that's your first point. Go ahead.
Second thing is reparation. I listened to Joe speaking. Joe, I thank you for being so generous in what you said about still trusting us that we will make this change. But that's the thing, almost more than anything, that I want to get done. And it will be done. That there will be a system of reparation for those who have been hurt and abused by the church. And I'm deeply, deeply sorry that we haven't got there already. But we will do that.
And that means that you are committing to a line item budget for redress and reparation.
Yeah, it's going to cost money. So we will.
How much money will likely have to be set aside for that?
I have no idea. It will probably be a lot of money, and I have no idea how much. But I'll say this. It will cost us a lot of money, I expect. But if we don't do it, it'll cost us our soul. And that's a much higher cost.
And will you be paying... Will you be setting aside more money for that than you have currently set aside for reputational management issues?
I have no idea. I have no idea at the moment. But I'm
so at the moment you can't undertake on that point. You may still, actually, in the future, pay more to PR companies than to victims.
Well, I very much doubt it. But I'm simply it's simply not possible to put a number on that at the moment. And I don't think anybody would expect it. I think what survivors and victims want to hear at the moment is that we are now determined to make good on the two main things that are coming out of all of this, that there's independence and that there's reparation.
Given just how much of a trashing the bishop's credibility has received over these issues, people are going to need more than words, Bishop. You've said that yourself at the start, Archbishop.
Yeah, but of course, but this is a radio interview. I can only offer you words at the moment. And the other thing is, I mean, the third thing, or the final thing that's really come through for me is about what is clearly identified in the report as a culture of deference and clericalism. Mm-hmm. And I really, really acknowledge that, and I really welcome that light being shone upon us, because you may think it's slightly strange that an archbishop is saying this, but boy, am I aware of this in the church, and it's deeply, deeply damaging. And if I may be so presumptuous, even the questions you're asking me in a way illustrate the problem. The way we're going to move forward is that there shouldn't be any one person who's in charge of all this. We need to build structures of proper accountability where bishops and others are held to account, where we're not above reproach, where it's not just what the archbishop says that goes. I am ultimately responsible. I am really, really determined to make this change.
Yes, but I understand that. But one of the problems, Archbishop, is that given the current structure of the church and the dynamics of power, it means that no one person is responsible overall for safeguarding. Isn't it time that, for example, the Archbishop of Canterbury or you acted as the lead bishop to take responsibility for safeguarding rather than leaving it to a diocesan bishop, for example? Something as serious as this should mean that the buck stops with you at the top.
Well, the buck does stop with us at the top.
I'm not at present, it doesn't.
Well, I'm not suggesting that that should change, but I'm not sure I may not have understood you correctly, but I'm not sure I entirely agree. I think responsibility needs to be taken at every level in the church. We've got a relatively new lead bishop in safeguarding who I think is really doing an excellent job and starting to drive forward the next steps of change that we need. And I think actually dealing with the culture of deference and clericalism, it is that I think has enabled in the past offenders to hide in the plain sight of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And that can not happen again, and we must do everything we can to prevent it. And part of that is a culture change, and that is something I think those of us at the so-called top can lead on.
Indeed, but there are survivors who would urge you not to take too much credit for change that has happened, given that many have described that pace of change in the Church of England as glacial.
Well, I certainly can't take any credit for it. You know, I've only been in post a couple of months. But what I can do is be clear about the direction of travel and the speed at which we will travel.
Right.
And the final thing I would say is I have in the last couple of days already been in touch with victims and survivors that I know. There's more to do on that. But that's the other thing. The changes that we need to make with victims and survivors, with those who can provide independent accountability. That is part of the big culture change that is necessary.
Stephen Cottrell, the Archbishop of York.